this whole world over, and now I'm going down to the rainbow's end. From twilight till dawn, trudging on and on, till I come to the rainbow's end.
Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Well, climate change, rampant pollution, excessive carbon use, these are issues at the front of many people's minds, but people wonder, what can we do about it? Is the problem at the source of energy extraction, or is it the transportation of it, the tankers, the pipelines, or is it at the consumer side? We're just using too much of it. We're not conserving. Well, to address these issues, I have two guests here today. First, a filmmaker, Julian Pinder, whose new documentary, Trouble in the Peace, that offers an artistic depiction of friction among the people living around the energy extraction sites in the Peace River Valley. Hi, Julian.
How are you doing?
And we also have a climate change NGO on a national level that does art-like, but not art, installations in galleries around Toronto. And this is Robert Shirky for Our Horizon.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks a lot for having me.
Hi, Robert. Okay, we'll start with you, Julian. In your film, which is a very beautifully shot, you show the farmers in the Peace River Valley in northern BC, Alberta area that are facing problems with energy firms like Encana. So what's going on there?
Well, there's been a huge influx of natural gas exploration in northwestern BC, northeastern BC rather, and northwestern Alberta in the Peace River Valley region. And it's been happening at such a rate that the people feel like they have no say in what's happening, and furthermore that their health is severely at risk because of it.
And what exactly is it? It's a sour gas. So what are they afraid the gas is doing?
It's the process of that I think most people know about now. It's called fracking, where they fracture the ground quite a ways down, and they extract the natural gas, which is H2S, a very toxic chemical gas, basically.
And it enters the water supply and the air? And
theoretically, it's not supposed to. It's supposed to go into pipes, which are then transported to facilities to process it, but most of the time, yes, it enters the air, it enters the water table, it enters the soil.
So isn't this the area where Weibo Ludwig lived?
That's right.
Yeah. What was his response, or attributed to him, I should say?
Well, I'm not sure what exactly his response was. Always that he had to protect his family above all else, whether it was by legal means or otherwise.
And some people, it wasn't necessarily him, the late Mr. Ludwig, but someone is what some people call eco-terrorist. What does that, what does that involve?
I mean, eco-terrorist is a funny term because I've always thought as the companies as being the eco-terrorists.
Good, good.
But,
okay.
But they call these people the eco-terrorists because they feel like they have no other choice but a response of violence.
And what form does this take?
Well, there's been bombings, pipeline bombings along the Encana pipelines and at the Encana facilities, where people have been pushed to the point where they've, like I said, responded, you know, rather than peacefully, with violence.
And the farmers in this area, they seem to be very special kind of farmer. Can you talk about them? They only settled there in the 70s, is that right?
Well, some of them, yeah. I mean, it's a different, it's a younger kind of region. The central character of the film, Carl Mattson, has actually been there for a number of generations. He was one of the original pioneers, his family, but most of them said, you know, it's a region that people go to find peace.
And they grow rapeseed
mainly canola? Yeah, canola, primarily canola. But it depends on, again, who it is. You know, the farmers that we were with primarily grew more localized organic type stuff, but the main larger agricultural industry is canola up there.
And what happened to a farmer named Mattson?
Well, I mean, he's an interesting fellow for the documentary, because we chose to follow him as one of our subjects because he was very very quiet and very kind of isolated. He's an artist as well and a very interesting fellow.
And he has a young daughter.
He has a young daughter named Hollis, yeah. And so his whole, you know, his whole existence is to take care of his daughter and make sure she's safe. And he's an interesting character because he's not an outspoken activist, or he's not a protester, he's not an industry guy. He's kind of stuck in the middle where he's a farmer. He needs fossil fuels to get by. He doesn't want to protest because he doesn't think it does anything. So the film is really about this internal struggle of this guy who I think more people can sympathize with on a more human level, and what his choice then becomes in the end.
But he does do things like trying to conserve a two-headed calf that was born there.
Yeah.
Would that have been because of the gas,
he thinks? Yeah. No, absolutely. He thinks that, so do I. I'm sure it's because of the gas. When every time there's been a sour gas leak there, you know, they've had very strange things happening with their livestock. Like the two-headed calf was born. A number of two-headed calves were born. A lot of deformations in livestock. Some children in the area who have had issues with autism and things like that. And again, it's hard to say that they're attributable to gas leaks, but it's very odd that around the same time these major leaks have happened, these kids and these livestock have been born and they have these issues.
When we see Madsen, it's done sort of like a movie within a movie. So there's a screen within the screen. Why did you choose to show it that way?
Because Carl Madsen has been interesting. It was very interesting to me because he has been documenting all the issues that have been happening up there. So he has he's been filming all the meetings between the local residents. He films all the explosions and the leaks that he sees happening. And he, you know, like you said, he's preserved the two-headed calf in an epoxy and embalmed it. So he's got this very interesting way of sort of artistically documenting all the issues that happen. So he's got a screen in his barn where he watches these things. So when I first thought that, I thought it would be a wonderful way to sort of tell his story through his eyes of him watching and contemplating the documentation that he had been doing all these years.
Oh, so these are his films shown inside your films.
Yeah, so it's very much like multi-level in terms of the reality of Carl and the perspective of the film. Yeah.
That's a very interesting... sort of fascinating to watch and very not like the usual documentaries. It's not newsy. It's sort of, it's more fluid than that.
Yeah. And I mean, we got a number of critics had given us crap for being overly stylized and wondering why this guy is watching footage in a barn and everything. And the reality is it's this guy's life. It's what he does, you know? So, I mean.
I'm in a very different tangent. I understand at the same time of the movie release, there's also a video game release.
Yeah, Alex Jansen and my producer Paul Scherzer from the film, the three of us got together, and Alex from Pop Sandbox took on this project of making a fairly interesting and large-scale video game that's available on iPhone app, and it's also been retrofitted into vintage arcades and put across the country. So it's kind of our way of creating new media within the film industry as a partner with the story that we're telling in the film, and also to allow it to access a different market of people in terms of getting the issue out there. And then, of course, also the media we get for having vintage arcades as part of our release and getting more focus on the issue.
And where can they find that?
With every, you know, wherever the film's being released, we're going to have the arcades out there.
Oh, cool.
And we also have, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think it's 6 to 8 vintage arcade units wrapped.
No, I actually used it, and it's great.
It is great.
It's very funny. Every time you put down the wrong pipe, if you knock down a tree by mistake, there's this crowd of protesters
comes out,
blocking the pipe. But meanwhile, the flow is about to come.
Yeah, no, it's great. I was drunk last night playing it in a bar.
Yeah,
it was funny. I walked into a bar and there were, you know, 20 arcades in this bar, and there was one guy playing our video game, or a game for change, we call it. So I walked up and bought him a beer.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, I'm going to now ask Rob to join the conversation.
Yeah, I want to play this video game.
No, that's very good.
Yeah.
Rob Shirky runs a national NGO about climate change, and he has an innovative approach to limiting energy consumption and spreading the word about climate change. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what this is? Tell me
about
this. Yeah,
it's an interesting concept. Thank you. And sitting here just listening to the documentary that sort of deals with harms on the supply side of things, our solution kind of works in tandem with that. We deal with demand side of things. And so I actually brought... what we have is it's a mock-up, so I'll pull it out for you. It's simple. It's all it is. Here, have a peek.
This is radio, so you can't see that. But this is what you see at a gas station, the giant metal pump thing.
Exactly. So it's just a gas nozzle, right? And on top of the gas nozzle, typically they'll advertise in sort of the square section, right where you hold the nozzle. Come inside for a cup of coffee, 99 cents, or buy a chocolate bar for 99 cents. So we're saying, well, why not use this space to communicate, hey, you know, use of these products can cause harm, right? So in the same way that, we sell tobacco and people are free to smoke, but it comes with a little warning that says, you know, continued use of this product could hurt you down the road. So just like use of fossil fuels contributes to climate change, which can cause, you know, extinction of species, lots of human suffering, you know, Why not put a warning label on gas pumps?
And tell me what it looks like. To me, it looks like a pack of cigarettes would look like now.
Yeah. No, it's really similar in that concept. So you've got, I guess, sort of, it's a 3-inch by 3-inch square warning label.
And what's the picture? Tell me about the picture and the words.
So we've got a few mock-ups. This one is a picture of a caribou, which actually a subspecies of a caribou does face extinction here in Canada. And so we've got the image of the caribou, and below that it says warning. Use of this fuel product contributes to climate change, which can put up to 30% of species at a likely risk of extinction. And we've taken that language from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports. So this is actually what scientists are telling us. And of course, that's deeply embedded in these obscure reports that frankly nobody reads. And what we do is we say, well, we need to communicate that to the public. Why not bring it, put it right at the point of purchase, sort of help the public, connect a consequence with its behavior, right? And our idea is, I think for some people, this will be the nudge that they need to change some of their behavior and reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. But we think it's going to contribute to sort of a collective shift in consciousness and almost create that political space we need for meaningful action on climate change.
So with cigarettes, they thought if we have on tobacco packages, pictures, these horrifying pictures of people dying of cancer and things like that. So in the same way, every time someone goes to fill up their car with gas, they get the same sort of image played at them.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
I love it.
Thank you. Yeah.
And what are the chances of the gas companies agreeing to that?
Probably nil. The good news is what we're going to do is, so municipalities, they have the legal authority to do this, care of their licensing regime. So just like a restaurant needs a license to operate and they have to abide by a variety of conditions. So in the interest of, you know, health considerations, environmental considerations, consumer protection, cities can require gasoline retailers within their jurisdiction to put these warning label on as a condition of maintaining their license. If they decide not to, then cities can actually revoke their license, effectively, you know, closing down their business, right? So what we've done actually is I've hired a couple of students to develop a database. We now have every single councillor's contact info in all of Canada, so over 25,000 emails. And we just launched this project, but hopefully if we're on timeline, it's going to be Friday of next week that we send out this email.
And so, what would the website be to look for this?
Yeah, it's ourhorizon.org, OURHorizon.org. And we actually have, so we're going to be sending out this email, but you can actually visit the website, and we've got a drop-down box for your province and then a drop-down box for your municipality. So you can then send our template letter and modify it, if you like, to your city councillors to help advocate for the idea.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you also have a gallery installation, which is an art. Explain that to me.
It's not. It's funny when people walk by, it looks like it's art. Maybe it is art. I don't know. But it's also part of this campaign. And so we've been here in Toronto hosting, I guess, at a variety of galleries are hosting our concept. And so we have mock-ups of these labels, what they look like on gas nozzles. And we also have 10 panels that explain the concept, because there's actually a lot of interesting psychological research, some interesting economics, and a lot of different theory behind this idea. And so if you go to our exhibit, it probably takes about 20 minutes to half hour to walk through. You can really learn how this idea would work. And so right now we're at the Toronto Free Gallery, which is at it's on Bloor West, right a few paces from Lansdowne Station.
And Julian, where is Trouble in the Peace playing?
It's being released in theaters on Friday, this Friday, March 8th.
Yep.
It's playing.
That'll be today when this broadcast. Yep.
Yeah. And it's at the Royal Cinema.
Oh, Royal in Toronto.
College
Great.
Street. Yep, and it'll be playing there for a number of days. So check the Royal's website
and give it a final pitch. What should people do?
I think I hope people come to see it because it's not just a film that preaches to the choir. It's not a film about the issue. It's a film about a community and a person who is deeply affected by these issues. And it's a way that people can actually understand the story through the eyes of a person rather than through the eyes of an issue that might have already been hammered into their brain.
Yeah, very interesting. More than a documentary, I think it's an artistic thought about the events combined with the events themselves.
Yeah, it's more of a humanistic contemplation. So I think that I hope that gets more of a crowd than just the environmentalists who already know what's going on. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah. Thanks, Julian. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
I've been
for
speaking
us.
With director Julian Pinder, whose film Trouble in the Peace opens today, and with Rob Shirky from Our Horizon, whose new installation at Bloor and Lansdowne, the Toronto Free Gallery, is on until March 17th. Go to ourhorizon.org for more information. This is Daniel Garber, the movies, each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.